You're listening to Policy Currents, a weekly podcast from RAND. I'm Deanna Lee.
And I'm Evan Banks. Every Friday, we bring you new insights from RAND's latest research and commentary. It's September 27th.
In 2014, RAND released a landmark report that drew much-needed national attention to America's military and veteran caregivers. The hidden heroes who provide daily care to wounded, ill, and injured service members and veterans. This week, a decade later, we've launched a major follow-up study to understand where progress has been made and where greater support could improve these caregivers' lives. The new report, commissioned by the Elizabeth Dole Foundation, finds that there are now more than 14 million military and veteran caregivers in the United States. Their duties can range from helping their loved ones eat and walk, to managing their mental health symptoms and memory deficits, to administering medications and preparing meals. Caregivers may also provide transportation to medical appointments, pharmacies, and grocery stores. Care recipients benefit from the work these caregivers do, and caregivers benefit as well, said RAND's Rajiv Ramchand, the study's lead author. But caregiving is not without its costs. In his testimony before the House Veterans Affairs Committee this week, Ramchand detailed some of these costs.
Caregiving takes an emotional toll. 43% of military and veteran caregivers to those aged 60 or under meet criteria for depression, nearly four times that as non-caregivers. Among the top barriers they report for not receiving mental health care or not having time for such care, and being worried about the side effects of medications or being hospitalized if they were to admit certain things, such as past suicidal thoughts. Our report makes strong recommendations to increase mental health care to caregivers and their families.
Those recommendations include exploring novel mental health care delivery models, such as delivering services during non-traditional hours, telehealth, and mobile health apps, all of which could help fulfill the unmet mental health needs of caregivers and their children.
Veteran and military caregivers also face significant financial challenges. Individuals reported spending more than $8,500 out of pocket each year on delivering care, and foregoing more than $4,000 in annual income. This may be one reason that one-third of these caregivers have incomes below 130% of the federal poverty level. It's clear that caregivers need more opportunities to access available financial support and ways to receive financial compensation for the work they perform. And caregivers who have jobs need more accommodations from employers to ensure that they can keep their jobs, minimize work disruptions, and ultimately keep money in their pockets. Such accommodations could include flexible work schedules, telecommuting options, paid family leave, a compressed work week, or access to an employee assistance program. Notably, about three-quarters of veteran and military caregivers are caring for individuals over age 60, but the burden of caregiving appears to fall heaviest on those caring for people 60 and younger. In fact, more than 40% of these caregivers met criteria for probable depression. 70% of them reported some difficulty paying bills, and 40% met criteria for food insecurity. These and other findings from our study provide a revealing look at the experiences of America's hidden heroes. The insights can help shape the nation's strategy for supporting military and veteran caregivers moving forward. Beyond the main report, we released several publications this week that focus on different aspects of this important topic, including specific actions that can help improve the health and well-being of caregivers, insights from caregivers in their own words, and the needs of those caring for individuals who served after 9/11. You can find all these resources at rand.org/militarycaregivers. You can also follow us on social media to learn more.
Earlier this month, Georgia officials charged the father of the suspected Appalachian High School shooter with two counts of second-degree murder, four counts of involuntary manslaughter, and eight counts of cruelty to children. This comes 5 months after a Michigan judge sentenced the parents of another school shooter to at least 10 years in prison related to their son's deadly rampage. Holding parents culpable is a prosecution trend likely to become more widely adopted. And according to Rand's Andrew Morrell, it's a sensible strategy. If it leads more parents to rethink giving their children unsupervised access to firearms, then it could deter some school shootings or other gun violence. But prosecuting parents is likely to be used only after preventable tragedies have occurred. Enacting and enforcing strong child access prevention laws, also known as safe storage laws, can prevent such tragedies by addressing the root issue: access to firearms. As part of the RAND Gun Policy in America initiative, Morrell and colleagues have reviewed all available research studies on the effects of child access prevention laws. They found supportive evidence, their highest evidence rating, that these laws reduce firearm suicides and homicides among young people. This suggests that implementing and enforcing child access laws may be a critical step in preventing firearm access that could lead to tragic outcomes. Safe storage laws are also a popular idea. In surveys, large majorities of firearm owners, non-owners, Democrats, and Republicans all agree that gun owners should be required to store their weapons where children cannot access them. But many states, almost half, have no such laws. In fact, neither Georgia nor Michigan had these laws in place at the time of the shootings that led to the prosecution of parents, although Michigan has since implemented a child access prevention law. So where does the resistance to these laws come from? Some gun owners fear that locking up their guns might make them inaccessible during an emergency, the situation that led many people to buy guns in the first place. But this argument is weakened first by the wide selection of quick access gun safes that use biometrics or other technologies to open in just seconds. And it's also weakened by the immediate danger to children or others who could gain unsupervised access to unsecured weapons. Preventing youth access to firearms is not just a hopeful strategy, Morrell says. It is a proven, data-driven approach that can save lives. It should be a priority for policymakers nationwide.
We'll close today's episode with an update on Ukraine's ongoing and much-discussed Kursk offensive. According to RAND's Anne Marie Daly, Ukraine made the right move in invading Kursk. But, she says, making the right decision in war does not guarantee positive outcomes. Daly calls Kursk a, quote, tactical masterstroke that changed the geometry of the battlefield. It forced Russia to divert forces from its offensive operations to allow for the creation of defenses. And as Russia moves its forces along the outside edge of the long curved front line to defend its border, Ukraine can take advantage of its interior lines of communication to move personnel and supplies more nimbly than Russia. The Kursk incursion also generates some clear strategic benefits. First, taking the fight to Russian land provides an important morale boost for Ukrainian soldiers and civilians who have not seen significant battlefield victories since 2022. Second, the operation forced Russian President Vladimir Putin to use conscripts, something he has avoided to this point. And third, the offensive demonstrated that Western fears of Russian red lines remain overblown, Daly says. Taken together, these benefits have allowed Kyiv to change the narrative and build a theory of victory. The critical question that remains, Daly concludes, is whether Ukraine will be able to take advantage of the new geometry on the battlefield by consolidating the gains it has made in Kursk. Quote, if Ukraine can dig in defenses, it will force Russia to continue using poorly trained conscripts, divert Russian forces from the front line in Ukraine, and lead to continued Russian bombing of its territory in an attempt to take it back.
That's it for this episode. If you'd like to learn more about what we discussed today, check out the show notes at rand.org/podcast. RAND is a nonprofit institution that helps improve policy and decision-making through research and analysis.